Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of Into the Killing. We'd love to hear from you if you know of any interesting cold cases that were eventually solved. If you know of a case, please visit our website, criminallylisted.com. We'd also love to hear about other true crime cases for our YouTube channel, Criminally Listed. And if you have any strange stories about the paranormal, we'd love to hear about them for our other YouTube channel, Paranormally Listed. In this episode, we will discuss two cases that both took place in England. The first one happened in November 1989. On November 7th, 1989, Queen Latifah released her debut album, All Hail the Queen. It contained the hit single, Ladies First. All Hail the Queen did moderately well, peaking at 124 on the Billboard Hot 200, but the album marked the beginning of one of the most diverse careers in entertainment. Queen Latifah was born Dana Elaine Owens on March 18, 1970 in Newark, New Jersey. Her lyrics were different than those of other rappers at the time. She focused on things like domestic violence and street harassment. Queen Latifah's third album, Black Rain, was a huge success. With Black Rain, she became the first solo female rapper to receive gold certification. She went on to act in TV shows like Living Single, starred in movies like Set It Off, and hosted her own daytime talk show, The Queen Latifah Show. She also continued to make music. In 1998, Queen Latifah performed with Boyz II Men, Smokey Robinson, Martha Reeves, and The Temptations at the Super Bowl 32 halftime. During her career, Queen Latifah has also won two Golden Globes, a Grammy, and an Emmy. She was also nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her role in Chicago. In 2021, Queen Latifah was awarded the BET Lifetime Achievement Award, making her the first rapper to receive the award. On November 15, 1989, the play A Few Good Men debuted at the Music Box Theater in New York City. It was the third play written by Aaron Sorkin. The first two plays didn't get much attention, but A Few Good Men was a hit. Even before it debuted, he had sold the rights to the movie. It was made into a movie in 1992 starring Tom Cruise, Jack Nicholson, and Demi Moore. It's about the trial of two Marines accused of killing a fellow Marine. The Marines claimed that they were following orders. Like the play, the film was a huge hit. It was nominated for four Academy Awards, including Best Picture, but it did not take home any statues. A Few Good Men was the launching pad for Aaron Sorkin's career in Hollywood. He went on to create several critically acclaimed TV series, including Sports Night, The West Wing, and The Newsroom. For his TV work, he has won 9 Emmys. He has also had success writing screenplays for films. His better-known screenplays include The Social Network, Moneyball, and Molly's Game. He's been nominated for 4 Academy Awards and won one for Best Adapted Screenplay for The Social Network. On November 21, 1989, President George H. Bush banned smoking on nearly all domestic flights. There was a few exceptions, some 6-hour flights to Alaska and Hawaii. There had been a ban on flights less than 2 hours, but was set to expire in several months. And 6 years later, in 1995, Canada, Australia, and the United States agreed to ban smoking on flights between them. In 2000, the United States banned all smoking on flights. On November 16, 1989, the number one song in the USA was When I See You Smile by Bad English. In the UK, it was All Around the World by Lisa Stansfield. The number one movie in the USA was Look Who's Talking, starring John Travolta and Kirstie Alley, and it featured the voice of Bruce Willis. In the UK, it was the romantic comedy-drama Shirley Valentine. In November 1989, 22-year-old Julie Hawk lived in Billingham, England. Billingham is a town on the East Coast. Hogg was a single mother of a 3-year-old boy, Kevin. She was working delivering pizzas. Early on November 16, 1989, a friend dropped her off at home. That night, Julie's mother, Ann Ming, and her husband were caring for Kevin. At 7:30 a.m., Ann called her daughter, but could not reach her. Ann and her husband went to Julie's home, and she didn't appear to be there. Ann called the police and reported her daughter missing. But the police were dismissive, suggesting that Julie had run off with a man. Ann insisted that she would not have abandoned her son. Finally, the police started searching for Julie. 29 officers looked around her home, but they found nothing of interest. After 5 days, they stopped investigating. Lead investigator guaranteed Ann that nothing had happened in Julie's home. Julie remained missing. Julie's estranged husband and Kevin's father, Andrew, moved into Julie's home with Kevin. In early 1990, Kevin decided to do some work on the bathroom. But as he worked on it, he noticed a terrible stench. Andrew told Ann about the smell. On February 1st, 1990, they looked around the house for the source of the odor. In the bathroom, Ann noticed that a bath panel was loose below the bath. She removed it, and the smell became stronger. She also saw something that would haunt her for the rest of her days. It was the decomposing face of her 22-year-old daughter. After 80 days, 22-year-old Julie Hogg had been found. The police were called. Julie's body had been wrapped in a blanket. It was determined that she had been sexually assaulted. Because of the level of decomposition, the medical examiner could not say for sure how she died, but he guessed that she had been strangled or asphyxiated. Finally, she had been sexually mutilated. Let's believe that she was mutilated after she was dead. Her estranged husband, Andrew, was quickly eliminated as a suspect. The police then began to investigate the men Julie had been dating after she and Andrew split up. They soon focused on William Dunlop, who went by Billy. Billy Dunlop and Julie had dated briefly. Dunlop was a former boxer who had a history of violence. In 1980, he kicked a man in the face at a party. Another time, he was trespassing in a house while armed with a knife. While he was trespassing, he punched a 15-year-old girl in the face, which cut her cheek. At his trial for the assaults, Dunlop's father pleaded with the judge, and Dunlop did not get any jail time. Later, in 1988, Dunlop was at a bar, and he punched an employee who told him to be quiet. He was fined and given a 2-year conditional discharge. Days after Julie's body was found, the police searched Dunlop's home. Under the floorboards, they found a key. It turned out to be the key to Julie's home. The key had Dunlop's fingerprints on it. Also, 9 acrylic fibers were found on the blanket wrapped around Julie's body. A forensic expert determined that they could have come from Dunlop's rugby jersey. On the night Julie was killed, Dunlop was at a bachelor party for one of his rugby teammates. Several people said he was wearing the jersey that night. During the bachelor party, the men watched porno movies and went to a strip club. The police theorized that Dunlop was in the mood for sex, so he went over to Julie's home. Julie was dating someone else at the time. She may have rebuffed his sexual advances, and he snapped and killed her. Or he went there specifically to rape and murder her. Dunlop was arrested 9 days after the body was found. In May 1991, Billy Dunlop went to trial for the murder of Julie Hogg. But there were several problems with the case. A big one was that no definitive evidence placed Dunlop at the crime scene at the time of the murder. The fibers might have come from his jersey, but it was not definitively proved that it came from his jersey. Also, just because Dunlop had Julie's keys at his home, it did not mean he used it that night. Another problem was that the medical examiner could not determine the cause of death. Dunlop's lawyer did a lot of victim blaming. He said that Julie was promiscuous. Shortly before she was murdered, she had sex with 3 men, the man she was dating, her boss, and one of his associates. Also, while she was married, she had several affairs. Her husband, Andrew, left her after he caught her in bed with one of his friends. Dunlop testified on his own behalf. He claimed he was being framed. He said that someone had hidden the key under the floorboards. However, he couldn't explain why his fingerprints were on the key. The trial lasted 2 weeks, and then the jury deliberated for 14 hours. They were not able to reach a majority decision. In the UK, juries do not have to reach a unanimous decision. If it is a 12-person jury, at least 10 people must agree. A mistrial was declared, and it was decided that Billy Dunlop would be tried again. Dunlop went to trial for a second time in October 1991. It was the same evidence that was presented in the first trial. Dunlop once again testified that he was being framed. This time, the trial lasted less than 2 weeks. Then the jury deliberated for 5 hours. They could not come to a majority decision. The judge asked the prosecution if they had any other evidence. They did not. So the judge acquitted Dunlop of murder. Julie Hogg's murder then went cold. Eight years went by. Then in August 1997, Billy Dunlop was again in trouble with the law. He had attacked his former girlfriend, who was pregnant, and her lover. He stabbed his ex-girlfriend with a carving fork and it pierced her lung. He bashed her lover in the head with a baseball bat, which caused facial injuries and fractured his skull. Both survived the attack. While in prison, Dunlop befriended a correctional officer. He confessed to her that he had killed Julie Hogg. He admitted to the murder because there was nothing that could be done to him because of the legal principle commonly known as double jeopardy. The principle is that if someone is acquitted of a crime, they cannot be retried for the same crime. Fine law states, double jeopardy keeps the government from using its superior resources to harass a citizen with multiple prosecutions. The first recorded use of double jeopardy in the United Kingdom was nearly 800 years earlier, in 1201. Because Dunlop had been acquitted of Julie's murder, he could not be charged. The correctional officer went to the police with the information. She agreed to wear a recording device. She recorded 60 hours of conversation with Dunlop, during which he confessed to the murder. Also, in letters to a girlfriend, he confessed to the murder. The police confronted Dunlop with his evidence, and he admitted to killing Julie. Dunlop explained that he had been drunk on the night of the murder. He had gotten into a fight with another man, and he was covered in blood and bruises. He went to Julie's home, and he claimed she made fun of his injuries. He snapped and strangled her to death with his hands. So while he admitted this to the police, because of the double jeopardy rules, he could not be tried again for her murder. However, because Dunlop testified at both trials and lied about being framed, he committed perjury. So in August 2000, he was convicted of perjury and sentenced to 6 years in prison. The sentence was set to start in 2002 when a 7-year sentence for attacking his ex-girlfriend and her lover ended. Just a 6-year sentence for Julie's murder did not sit well with her mother, Ann Ming. Ann campaigned to change the laws regarding double jeopardy. Then in 2003, something major happened. In 2003, the three biggest movies in the UK were Finding Nemo, The Matrix Reloaded, and The Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. 14 years earlier, in 1989, when Julie Hogg was murdered, the three biggest movies in the UK were Batman, Shirley Valentine, and Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. The UK's biggest albums in 2003 were Life for Rent by Dido, Justified by Justin Timberlake, and Strip by Christina Aguilera. In 1989, there were 10 Good Reasons by Jason Donovan, A New Lame by Simply Red, and But Seriously by Phil Collins. In 2003, Nintendo released Game Boy Advance SP, the sixth generation of Game Boy. The iToy webcam was available for purchase. The Fossil debuted its first smartwatch, the Wrist PDA. As for food and drink, Lay's Stacks were available, rapper Nelly released his energy drink, Pimp Juice, and McDonald's released their premium line, which included chicken selects and salads, and they expanded their McCafe menu. Products released in 1989 include Nintendo's first Game Boy, Huggies pull-up diapers, and the toy Polly Pocket. And if you were hungry, for the first time you could have Honey Bunches of Oats and Magnum ice cream, and if you were thirsty, you could drink Keystone beer. In November 2003, the Criminal Justice Act 2003 was passed in the UK. It addressed double jeopardy. The Crown Prosecution Service website says, "The Act reforms the law relating to double jeopardy by permitting retrials in respect of a number of very serious offenses where new and compelling evidence has come to light." The law was to go into effect 2 years later. After the Act was passed, Ann Main campaigned to have Billy Dunlop retried for the murder of her daughter. The Crown agreed, and Dunlop was charged with Julie's murder. He became the first person to be charged with murder after the double jeopardy law was changed. In September 2006, 17 years after Julie's murder, Billy Dunlop pleaded guilty. He was sentenced to life with a minimum of 17 years. But this wasn't the end of Dunlop's legal problems. In July 2017, Dunlop went to trial for allegations that he sexually assaulted two underage girls in the 1980s. Dunlop denied the allegations. He admitted he was a violent man, but he was not a child molester. The jury deliberated for 2.5 hours. They acquitted him of all charges. Counting for Dunlop's time held in jail while awaiting trial, he was eligible for parole in September 2021. For all his crimes, he had spent 20 years in prison. In September 2022, the parole board recommended that he be moved to an open prison. An open prison is minimum security, and inmates can go on temporary leaves. But the Justice Secretary blocked the move. In 2024, Billy Dunlop will have a public parole hearing. At the time of this recording, Billy Dunlop is 60 years old, and he is still incarcerated. For our second case, we're going back to June 1975. In June 1975, the President of the United States was Gerald Ford. Months earlier, in October 1974, Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned over allegations of political corruption and accepting bribes. He pleaded guilty to tax evasion the same day. He was fined $10,000 and given 3 years of probation. He's the only Vice President to resign in disgrace. In the summer 1974, Michigan Republican Gerald Ford was appointed Vice President. Less than a year later, in August 1975, President Richard Nixon resigned as a result of the Watergate scandal. Ford then became President. Gerald Ford is the only person to become the American President who is not elected as a President or Vice President. On June 1, 1975, Ford was in Salzburg, Austria. As he and First Lady Betty Ford were walking down the stairs from Air Force One, President Ford slipped and fell down several steps. It was recorded and shown repeatedly in the news. Ford blamed the fall on his knee acting up because of an old football injury. In November 1975, Chevy Chase portrayed him on Saturday Night Live as a bumbling oaf. Ford was never able to lose the reputation of being clumsy, even though it wasn't accurate. He was a star college football player, and as president, he continued to ski and golf. Even 20 years later, The Simpsons portrayed him as clumsy. Jimmy Carter narrowly defeated Ford in the 1976 election. Gerald Ford died in December 2006 at age 93. The musical, Chicago, debuted at the 46th Street Theater in New York City on June 3, 1975. The musical is based on the 1926 play of the same name. John Kander wrote the music, Fred Ebb wrote the lyrics, and Ebb and Bob Fosse, the famed choreographer, wrote the book. The musical is set in the 1920s and is based on the true stories of Blue Nan and Belva Gardner. In April 1924, Annan was married but was having an affair with her co-worker, Harry Kelstad. On April 3rd, while Annan's husband was at work, Kelstad was at her apartment. There was an argument, and 23-year-old Annan shot Harry Kelstad in the back. Then, over the next several hours, Annan drank, listened to records, and supposedly danced while Kelstad bled to death. In March 1924, 35-year-old Belva Gardner shot to death her lover, Walter Law. Law was married with a child. Both cases were media spectacles, and the women became minor celebrities. The musical, Chicago, was a big hit. In 2002, it was adapted into a film starring Renee Zellweger, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Richard Gere. It was nominated for 13 Academy Awards and won 6, including Best Picture. In June 1975, Sam G. Khanna was going to testify in front of the United States Senate Committee. G. Khanna had been head of the Chicago Outfit crime family. Al Capone had formerly run the Chicago Outfit. G. Khanna was an influential man with many connections. Supposedly, this included former President John F. Kennedy. G. Khanna was going to testify in front of the committee about an alleged plan involving the Mafia and the CIA working together to assassinate Cuban President Fidel Castro in the 1960s. The American government wanted the communist leader removed from power because they considered him dangerous. The Mafia didn't like Castro because they had run gambling operations in Cuba, but that came to an end when Castro came to power. So this made Castro a common enemy of the American government and the Mafia. On June 19, 1975, Sam G. Khanna was in his Oak Park, Illinois home. It was 5 days before he was supposed to testify. The police had surveillance on G. Khanna's home. He was in his basement kitchen behind an armed door. That night, 81-year-old Sam G. Khanna's caretaker found him dead in the kitchen. He had been shot to death. He had been shot 7 times in the head. He had been shot once in the back of the head. Then the shooter put the gun in his mouth and shot him 6 more times. No one has ever been arrested for G. Khanna's murder. There are several theories regarding who killed him and why. Many people believe that he was killed by someone he knew because there were no signs of a break-in or forced entry. So G. Khanna probably felt comfortable letting them into the kitchen. There was speculation that the way he was shot in the mouth was a message to anyone who might want to talk that they should keep their mouth shut. This could have been a mobster or an agent with the CIA. G. Khanna was also a known womanizer. So another theory is that a scorned lover or someone associated with the lover killed him. It's doubtful that the case will ever be solved. On June 1st, 1975, the number one song in the United States was Thank God I'm a Country Boy by John Denver. In the UK, it was The Whispering Grass by Windsor Davies and Don Estelle. Davies and Estelle were actors in the sitcom It Ain't Half Hot Mom, and they performed the song as part of the show. The number one movie in the USA was the action film Breakout, starring Charles Bronson and Robert Duvall. In the UK, it was the disaster film The Towering Inferno. In June 1975, 15-year-old Jacqueline Montgomery, who went by Jackie, lived in Islington, North London, England. At the time, Jackie's family was going through a rough patch. A year earlier, her mother had moved out, leaving Jackie, her 2 younger brothers, and her younger sister in the care of their father. About 8 months earlier, the family was rehoused by the welfare department. On June 1st, 1975, Jackie was home alone. Around 2:15 a.m., Jackie's father, Robert, came home. He found his 15-year-old daughter dead on the living room floor. She had been stabbed several times. She had also been strangled with the cord from an electric iron. Before she was killed, she had been raped. The police believe that she had been dead for over 12 hours. The phone was off the hook, and the police determined it had been that way since the late morning the day before. It's believed that Jackie tried to call for help, but her killer overpowered her. The police quickly developed a suspect. It was her aunt's ex-partner, 28-year-old Dennis Magori. Magori worked in construction. Magori had a history of violence against women. This included abusing Jackie's aunt, Josie. Josie had recently left Magori and moved about 200 miles away to Manchester. Magori didn't know where Josie had moved. Not long after Jackie's murder, Magori showed up at a neighbor of Jackie's. He was acting bizarre and jittery. He also had several injuries. There was a bruised lip, a long scratch on his neck, and smaller scratches on his wrist and arm. Magori showed the neighbor a piece of paper which he believed had Josie's address on it. The paper had been ripped out of a notebook. Magori had a bizarre story about how he got the piece of paper. He said that 4 men had attacked him and then gave him the piece of paper. The police learned that Magori had made sexual advances on 15-year-old Jackie and she had rebuffed him. One time while she was sunbathing, he tried to grab and kiss her. Another time, Jackie was babysitting for her aunt. Grigori came over, and he was drunk. He tried to put his hand up her skirt. The police arrested Grigori, and the piece of paper with the address was in his pocket. The police had found Jackie's diary, and a page was torn out of it. It was determined that the paper came from the journal. The police interviewed Grigori, and he claimed he did not see Jackie that day, and he had not been to her home. The police did not believe him, because the page came from her journal. Dennis Grigori went to trial in January 1976. However, at the time, the police only had circumstantial evidence. The judge ended up acquitting Grigori because of a lack of evidence. As a result, the case went cold. Decades went by, then in 2015, 30 years after the murder, Jackie Montgomery's family requested that the case be reopened. Of course, in those 30 years, a lot had changed. In 1975, the biggest movies at the UK box office were The Towering Inferno, The Exorcist, and The Man with the Golden Gun. The Man with the Golden Gun starred Roger Moore, the third actor to play James Bond in the Eon films. It was the ninth movie in the series. The number one movie in the UK in 2015 was the 24th film in the series, Spectre, starring Daniel Craig, the sixth man to play Bond. The second biggest box office hit in the UK was Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, and the third was Jurassic World. Worldwide, in 1975, the best-selling albums were all from rock bands. They were Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd, Physical Graffiti by Led Zeppelin, and Toys in the Attic by Aerosmith. The best-selling albums in 2015 all came from artists who were born more than 10 years after the murder of Jackie Montgomery. They were 25 by Adele, Purpose by Justin Bieber, and Beauty Behind the Madness by The Weeknd. Companies that started in 1975 included the restaurant franchise Chili's, the luxury brand Armani, and the home of Warhammer, Games Workshop. In 2015, Kraft Foods and H.J. Heinz Company merged and became Kraft Heinz. Snoop Dogg launched his own cannabis company, Leafs by Snoop, and OpenAI, creators of ChatGPT, was founded. In November 2015, the authorities agreed to honor the family's request. The cold case investigators looked at the case file. It turned out that vaginal swabs had been taken and they had been stored properly. A DNA expert was able to build a profile. It turned out that Dennis McGorry's DNA was on file for a 2009 arrest. The charges were never made public. The profile was compared to McGorry's DNA. The official statement said that the DNA was a billion times more likely to be from Grigori than anyone else. Thanks to the change in the Double Jeopardy law in 2003, Grigori could be charged with Jackie's murder. So on March 3, 2020, 35 years after Jackie Montgomery's murder, 72-year-old Dennis Grigori was arrested. Grigori went to trial 2 years later in March 2022. But he fell ill and the trial was stopped. He went to trial again in December 2022. The evidence against him was overwhelming. Grigori had cuts and scratches on his face, which was evidence that he had been in an altercation. He claimed that four men beat him up and then gave him the piece of paper. But that was a lie because the paper came from Jackie's notebook. Grigori also claimed that he was not at Jackie's home and did not see her on the day she died. However, the DNA testing once again proved he was lying. Grigori also had a history of acting inappropriately towards Jackie. Something else was revealed at the trial. There was a burn mark on Jackie's leg from the iron. The prosecution said that this was evidence that Grigori tortured Jackie to get her to reveal the location of her aunt. The jury deliberated for just over an hour. Grigori was found guilty. In January 2024, Dennis Grigori was sentenced to 26 years in prison. When he was sentenced, he was 75 years old, so he'll probably die in prison. Jackie Montgomery's murder is the oldest double jeopardy case ever prosecuted in the United Kingdom. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Please visit our website if you know of any cases you want us to cover. Well, that's all for today. Thank you again for listening.